Thank you. I should point out that this isn't actually the final copy of my presentation. Something seems to have gone wrong. I uploaded it last week, but I've had to draw on a flash drive that isn't exactly the final presentation. I guess something happened when it crossed the border. And I have no conflicts of interest. I feel like I'm crossing a border here and I'm saying no, nothing to declare. Go through the green channel, which obviously my presentation didn't manage to achieve. So the problem I want to talk about today is when you are conducting a survey in a country or a region where you have really not very good information about the population of interest. You may have very little to go on. And one of the questions is, how do you pull out a proper random sample? And as you know, the basic principle we're working on is that we have to understand what is the probability of selecting a unit. And a unit could be a household or a particular individual. One of the features, of course, is that you also don't have to get equal probabilities of selection of each person. So here are some of the standard sampling methods that we might think about. So simple random sampling or stratified random sampling. Now the problem with them, of course, is that you have to have essentially a census of subjects. You have to know who is in the population. Variants that are used are cluster sampling. These are often used in population surveys. Cluster sampling or multi-stage sampling. Multi-stage sampling is when you sample smaller and smaller groups, so you can start off at a higher level, maybe a broad area, then go to a town, localize it, and finally home on individuals. And combinations of these are often used in population studies. You still often have to know a fair bit about the population of interest, that is the target population. So the situation we were looking at is one where we were planning a survey in southern Lebanon. And essentially there are a number of larger towns, cities, if you like, and also some rather small towns and indeed some villages. We did have a certain amount of information on the numbers of people in each town. They were unfortunately rather out of date. And we also had no census. There hadn't, in fact, been a census of the population for quite a number of decades. So what I'm going to do now is go through some of the methods people have used to do sampling in these various situations, and then I'll get into the method that we chose to use. So GPS locations can be used to identify starting points. You can randomly choose points in a given area. And one of the approaches adopted is to use satellite photos, or at least some kind of aerial photos, to find the nearest building to that location. An alternative would be to go to the location and identify the nearest building. And then typically people will move in a random direction, or a defined direction to the next buildings. And that produces a cluster. Obviously, if you're getting buildings that are close together, you have a cluster and have to incorporate that into the analysis. That's fine. The problem, though, that this creates is that it doesn't allow for density of population, at least the way it's framed. Another method that we've seen is to look at, is to use, again, GPS locations to identify random points, and this time it uses an area on a grid. So you then find the nearest K houses in any given direction, and that forms a cluster. Now, in the particular paper I was looking at, they looked at the distance from the randomly chosen point to the furthest building in the cluster, and the distance was defined as what was called the radius of the sampling point. And the description is that this was done to ensure during the analysis that oversampling of rural populations, which often occurs with spatial sampling, would not create a systematic bias. It wasn't actually quite clear how they did that in the analysis. I assume in some fashion they took account of the distance, possibly the area enclosed by a radius of that magnitude, to look at and to incorporate that into the analysis, but it wasn't explicit in the paper. A third method that I'll point out is, again, using satellite photos, but this time you can identify all buildings in the defined area, and then you can randomly sample from them. And that essentially produces a random sample of buildings. A complication of this is that some buildings may have multiple residences, and in those circumstances, you would randomly sample one of the households within the building and incorporate that into your analysis by understanding how many households there were in the building, and therefore you can get the appropriate probabilities. One of the problems, of course, with this approach is that it could be a huge amount of work to identify all the buildings in an area. In southern Lebanon, for example, there would have been something like a few hundred thousand buildings. And I'm not sure anybody would want to go through the effort of identifying all of them, numbering them, and taking a random sample. An alternative approach is, and this was in a paper by Chechi and Roberts, is to split up the area into a number of sub-areas. You hope that you have a rough estimate, at least, of the number of buildings within those areas, and then take clusters proportional to the size, the population size of a sector. That, though, will only be a rough estimate, and to the extent that you get the population, or at least household density, incorrect, you will have incorrect probability estimates and incorrect weights. And there are a variety of other methods that have been used. They can depend on local conditions. One of the things you do also have to take into account in doing this is the safety of interviewers. Another problem that can occur, and this was my colleagues, Royce Hudson, who's in the audience, in a survey in Haiti. There, after the earthquake, there was a possibility that all members of a household had died. So when you tried to identify the household, you would underestimate if you were looking at violence or mortality clustered within families. Sometimes when you read the papers as well, it's not always clear that appropriate analyses have been conducted. And at times, there seems to be a bit of a trade-off between bias and resource intensity of what you're doing. So let me then now talk about what we were doing. And you'll notice highlighted, you've got the key elements of what we did. What we did is we first sampled towns and villages. We actually chose the three largest cities. We decided to include them, so essentially they were being chosen with probability equal to one. In the remainder, we use probability proportional to size, or maybe that should more strictly be referred to as probability proportional to estimated size because of the limited information we had on the population. What we then did is we randomly chose GPS locations and essentially took north, south, east, west coordinates, and they were accurate to within about 1 meter. For those of you who are metrically challenged, 1 meter is about just over 1 yard. We then identified from the satellite photos all buildings within a 20 meter radius. And so essentially you drew a 20 meter radius on the photo, a circle, and then we randomly chose one building from within those identified. So the interviewers then went to the location. They decided if the building chosen was random, was a residential building or not. And if it wasn't residential, they ignored it, went on to the next location. If that was multi-residential, they sampled one household at random and then took one adult in the household randomly chosen, or at least as random as the adult with the last birthday is random. So this in fact allows us to estimate the probability of selection. And it's actually a staged process. I won't go through, but just note at the bottom that you have different probabilities of the household and different for the adult who was chosen, because some of the questions related to the household as a whole, some were about attitudes of the individual, so we had to make that distinction. And then you simply take the inverse to get the sampling weights, and you could build in the response proportion. So a number of issues with this method. One is the recency of photos, and how up-to-date are they? That can be both a pro or con, because in our case, we were interested in identifying the households that had been present before. We were doing this sometime after the war with Israel. And so if households had been destroyed, we would miss the people who had been there and had suffered from violence. So we actually deliberately went for households a little that were for photos that were slightly out of date. There's also an issue of how accurately you can count buildings. What counts as a building within the circle? And we can think of maybe the center of the building, but there can be some degree of inaccuracy there. In another survey we've done, we had some problems with the interviewers following protocol. There was some miscommunication. Somehow they misunderstood what was intended, or it wasn't properly explained, and that led to a failure to follow the process appropriately. I've already mentioned the problem of safety and security of interviewers. In this particular survey in southern Lebanon, some of the villages and towns were controlled by Hezbollah, and they essentially told the interviewers, get out of town, go away. An advantage of this is interviewers don't have to do any enumeration at the site, and of course that could help them in terms of safety and security. If there are people around who might be suspicious, they can get in, identify the relevant building, do the interview, and get out fairly quickly. Another issue might be overlap of circles, and that can affect, of course, the total area that you're covered in the circles, and that would have impact on the probability of selection. What you actually have to do on that is add the area of the circles that contain not just of the ones in which there are residential buildings, but of the ones without any residential building, because you then have the proportion of the total area of the town or village or the area you're looking at that has been sampled. There could be, and this is a bit of a quibble, there could be some boundary conditions, because if a data point is chosen that is within the chosen radius of the boundary of the town, then obviously the area of the circle that you've got is slightly less than a full circle. That's a bit of a, it's probably not going to be a big deal if you have fairly large areas in the town. Another thing we came across was quite a lot of, the way we had done it, we got quite a lot of variability in the weights. That meant that we would have to get estimates that were not quite as precise as we might like. It's better to have weights that are relatively consistent and relatively close. The shape, of course, doesn't have to be a circle. It could be a square, anything you like. It could be a triangle, an octagon, whatever. So that's opened. And finally, of course, is sample size estimation. You don't really have a good understanding in advance. We used a design effect of 2, and that seemed to work. Another slight quirk of this method is that when you begin the study, you don't actually have an idea of the probability of choosing any household. Usually when you do a survey, at least in principle, the probability can be estimated. Here, though, if you had these two different circles, each surrounding a data point chosen, they would have contained different number of buildings. So a particular building, the one that's with the arrow, that would actually have a 1 in 8 chance of being selected if you had sampled the circle on the left, but only a 1 in 5 chance if it were the circle on the right. I'm not quite sure how that works out. So we've actually used this in a couple of other places. We've used it in refugee camps in southern Lebanon and in a survey done in Haiti. So the method seems to work pretty well. It does allow for population density. And I think it can be readily applied pretty well anywhere, as long as you have reasonable photos. There are some methodological issues, and in fact, I've mentioned the issue of the circles that have give you different probabilities of selecting a given building. I'm working with a graduate student doing some simulations to try and understand that, and we're also building in the boundary conditions on that. So that's it, and just to acknowledge our funders, Small Arms Survey and the British Embassy in Beirut. Thank you.
And our fourth presenter will be Merritt Bover. And Merritt completed undergrad training at the University of Virginia, majoring in music and chemistry. Her master's degree, also from the University of Virginia, is in health evaluation sciences. And she recently completed a PhD in epidemiology from the University of North Carolina at Chapel Hill. She is currently at Oregon State University. Her research interests include efficacy and cost effectiveness of maternity care, women's health, and physical activity.